Hebrews chapter 10, verse 31, about Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. This would be a good time to preach that one tonight. It's so hot in here. The sermon about God dangling folks over the pits of hell. Well, this would be a good occasion. We've got the effects with it tonight. I notice a lot of you fanning. The first place I ever preached was a little bitty town when I was in school at Abilene, and I'd drive out there every Sunday and preach for them. And they had, like most of the little country churches did, the funeral home fans. Y'all remember those? Funeral home always provided them. They had the advertisement on them, local funeral home, and you could fan. And I was reminded of that a little bit ago. I saw some of you fanning. My brethren, by the way, are the only ones that I know that can go to sleep and still fan. I used to watch them. They'd go sleep through a sermon, but they'd never miss a beat with that fanning. But anyway, we might see, we might ask the school system if we paid them another $15 or $20 if they'd turn the air on and help us with this. Is it just me or is it hot in here tonight? It's hot. It's hot everywhere. You know, certain places, I guess that's what I'm talking about there, certain places and certain environments, surroundings, warrant certain types of conversations. For example, you don't go to a football game to talk about the ballet. It's usually two different crowds that are there. There's just something that doesn't feel right about a hot dog in one hand and peanuts in the other and sitting there and describing the ballet that you saw last night with the tutus and the slippers. It doesn't fit. You go on a vacation or you just take the day off. You go to the golf course. You go hunting. You go fishing. Whatever it is that you like to do to get away from pressures, when you get there, you don't really want somebody talking to you and bringing up the pressures that you have at work, at the office. It's not what you came out there for. In fact, if you start doing that, you get more uptight because you realize, I don't have time to be out here hitting this golf ball. I don't have time to be watching the cork on the end of my line. I better get back and go to work. That setting does not warrant a conversation about the stresses and the pressures of life. I can remember one time being on a lectureship. It was out in Red River. I talked about this last week, the Red River Family Encampment. It's a good thing to go to. They just had it last week if you ever get an opportunity. There'll be 2,500, 3,500 Christians, members of the Lord's Church, assemble out there in the cool mountains of Red River, New Mexico, and sing and be together for a full week. But the speaker just ahead of me, he chose for his illustration the noise and the racket of heavy traffic. And there wasn't any traffic out there. Nobody had been around traffic for days. And I thought, that fits back in Houston. That fits in Dallas. That fits in Nashville. That doesn't fit Red River, New Mexico. Surely you had a better illustration in your bag of illustrations than that. Places, settings, they dictate, they warrant the conversations that we have. Jesus understood that. He understood the importance of picking the right place at the right time. And in Matthew 16, which you just heard read a moment ago, Jesus asked arguably perhaps the most important question of his entire ministry. And he chose Caesarea Philippi for the spot where he's going to ask it. I want to spend just a few minutes with you tonight and ask the question, why Caesarea Philippi? Why did he do that? Well, Caesarea Philippi had a very interesting history. Just a little bit of historical background information. It was the capital. It was the chief residence of Herod Philip. Josephus, the church writer tells us that the city, the whole area, was given to Herod Philip in 20 B.C., 20 years before Jesus was born. Jesus is 31 years old here at this time. So for 50 years, 50 plus years, Herod Philip and his family had controlled this area. It was given to him by Caesar. So to honor Caesar, he named it Caesarea, Caesar, Philippi. He wanted his name on it too. But Caesarea, given to Philip by Caesar, that's how the city got its name. And it was to differentiate it from the other Caesarea, which was 75 miles northwest from Jerusalem on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. So that's how it got its name. In A.D. 60, about 30 years after what we're reading here in Matthew 16, the city's renamed. It's renamed Neronius in honor of the Roman Emperor Nero. They like to put their names on things. But the name was later changed back, just a few years later, to Caesarea Philippi. Excuse me. It was an ideal location. Very, very good location. It was 25 miles northeast of the Sea of Galilee. And it was at the foot of Mount Hermon, right there at the foot of a beautiful mountain, which is why most scholars believe that the story of Jesus and the Transfiguration, where he takes Peter, James, and John up on the mountain, is probably Mount Hermon. We don't know that for sure, but that happens in the next chapter, Matthew 17, and they're right there at Mount Hermon. So most believe and connect that that's probably where that happened. Caesarea Philippi was the most northern point of Jesus' travels. He didn't get any further to the north on the map than right here. Because of the location, to the sea and to the mountains and to everything, it's a perfect place for commerce. And people loved it there. Climate was good there. And it was sitting on the international trade route from Tyre to Damascus. But beyond the history and the location, Caesarea Philippi was a center of cultic and pagan worship. Many of the Old Testament gods of the Baal gods, they were housed here at Caesarea Philippi. The Greeks had named the city after one of their gods. Had a lot of different names, this town did. There was a cave on the outskirts of the city. The cave was devoted to a different god from all the others. There was a beautiful white marble temple dedicated to Augustus, which would become a focal point for the cultic worship and the emperor worship that would come. And I mention all this for one reason. The environment was even more unwelcoming to Jesus than most places he had been to. It wouldn't have been nearly as violent like Jerusalem, or they are jealous like Nazareth. But Caesarea Philippi, they didn't care who Jesus was. They had their own religious culture. They were directly opposed to what Jesus was seeking to represent. Yet this is the location that Jesus decides to ask this critically important question. Not only did he want to know who people say I am, he said, who do you, riveting in on his 12 apostles, who do you say that I am? And he asked that question. Well, their answers represented the perceptions of the day. We didn't read the whole passage a while ago, but you can read it. Matthew 16, but you know the passage. First of all, they said, some say you're John the Baptist. That's who you are. Two chapters earlier, Matthew chapter 14, Herod the Tetrarch, that's who he said Jesus was. He said, is this John the Baptizer? So they said, that's the first thing some people say. Number two, they said, some say Elijah. The Jews, those who knew the Jewish history, they believed that Elijah would come before the Messiah. says that word for word in Malachi chapter 4, verse 5. They just had their timetable off. Elijah came several centuries before. It wasn't an immediate thing. There was a large gap. It wasn't a direct transition. But they said, some of them say, you're Elijah. Then number three, they said, some say you are Jeremiah or another one of the prophets. One of those. You see, they're standing at the marketplace of religion. The cultic and the pagan religion surrounded them. That's why Jesus, I believe, asked them at that point, who do people say that I am? Another reason I think he may have picked this location was geographically, if you look at it, Caesarea Philippi was founded, grounded, and surrounded by rock. Sort of like going to Yosemite National Park. Anybody ever been to Yosemite National Park where all the granite is and all the big mountains of rock? Beautiful place. Lots of waterfalls. Prettiest granite in the world. Caesarea Philippi was surrounded, was grounded by rock. So when Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I, the Son of Man, are? That's what the people are saying. They're saying John the Baptist, Elijah, or Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. But who do you say that I am? Peter spoke up. You know the answer. He said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. This is statement's full of theological importance. Christ was the Greek word for Messiah. A word which meant anointed one, proving that he wasn't Elijah. He wouldn't precede the Messiah. He was the Messiah. Peter said, that's who you are. And you're not just the Messiah, you're the Son of God, deity. You're God in the flesh. Jews thought the Messiah would be a king. They didn't realize he's going to be God as well. But Peter says, no, that's exactly who you are. You are the Christ, the anointed one. And you're the Son of God. And you know Jesus' statement. What did he say? Blessed art thou, Peter. And he says, by the way, you didn't get that from the marketplace. You didn't get that from man. You got that from God. But he says, upon this rock. And Peter's name, Petros, that Jesus gave him, meant rock. So Peter, you're rock. Your confession is rock. Upon this rock I'll build my church. What a better, finer place to ask the question and get the answer than in rock founded, rock surrounded Caesarea Philippi. Well, again, I would suggest it was a chosen place for a chosen question. I don't know why I looked at that clock. It hadn't moved since this morning, has it? Some habits are hard to break. But it was a chosen place for a chosen question. The 12 could have been looking at temples and shrines, even the cave where another god lived. And that's where Jesus asked them the question. He didn't ask it in Jerusalem, not in Capernaum, not in Nazareth, not along the shores of Sea of Galilee, but he asked it in Caesarea Philippi. Now you say, well, why do you make that point? For this reason. I'm curious about you and your life as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus. Think about all the times that people have asked you about Jesus. How many times has it been inside a place of worship like this? How many times has it been inside the quote-unquote church building, church house? I dare to say probably not very often. It's not where you usually get asked. That's not the spot. That's not the location. It's not within these walls. That's because everybody, if they were to come here, they know what your answer is going to be here. They want to ask you somewhere else. They want to ask you in those uncomfortable spots, like when they're sitting next to you on an airplane, on a long trip. And all of a sudden, they ask who you are, and they find out you're a Christian, and they have all these hard questions, and you don't really know how to answer them sometimes. Now, it's not usually that way. I told y'all one time that I learned when I used to do a lot of flying. I do a lot of driving now. I don't do the flying I used to do. I used to be on a plane every week going somewhere, it seemed like, to an auto auction or something somewhere. And I learned when I'd get on the plane to come home that depended on whether I wanted to talk or whether I wanted to be left alone, whenever they'd ask me, the guy, whoever it would be sitting next to me, what do you do for a living? If I wanted to talk, I'd say I'm in the automobile business. Everybody wants to talk about cars. And they'll talk your ear off. If I wanted peace and quiet, I'd say I'm a minister, I'm a preacher. And they'd grab that magazine out of the back of the seat. And they'd open it up, and it was like, how did I get caught in this position? Of all people, for me to get seated, and they're afraid you're going to preach to them on the way home. They usually leave you alone. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes they may ask you a question. I was on a flight one time, and I told them I was a preacher, and it didn't work. She said, I've been needing to talk to a preacher. I've got a few, I need a little bit of help, need a little counseling. Well, my goodness, this woman had more problems than you can imagine. I was the one that was hoping, where is the love field? I found out more about this woman in an hour's time than I ever wanted to know. And there was no way in the world. Dr. Phil couldn't have done her any good, I'm telling you. But people will pick what seems like unopportune times, but quite frankly, they're the opportunity times that we need to be ready for. They're the times when people are willing to talk. It's when you're walking down the hallway at work or at school. It's when you're in the break room and somebody knows that you're a Christian and they come up and they've got a question. That's the opportunities that we have to respond. So that's why I bring it up. Those opportunities come at times in life for a reason. And I think it's probably the same reason Jesus chose Caesarea Philippi in Matthew 16. It was a chosen place for the chosen question at the chosen time. And I go back to the obvious truth, which I don't believe to be a coincidence. I think Jesus did not ask his disciples earlier than this because they weren't ready. And it wouldn't have had the same impact. But he waited for the right moment. Are you ready for the moment that will come for someone to ask you the question? Not in church, but in your life. I used to go to a lot of baseball games. Don't go to as many anymore, but when my son was smaller, he loved to go to the Rangers. And I know y'all hate to hear about the Rangers. Y'all went to the Astros, and I like that too. But we'd go to the Ranger games, and the favorite thing he wanted to do was get there early and watch the batting practice. And we'd get there for the batting practice, and it was amazing how the players, the Rangers, would hit one home run after another into the stands. And the kids would fumble around for them, and they'd get all of these balls because players that you hadn't even really heard of that were way, way down on the roster, they were just hitting them out of the ballpark, hitting them into the stands. I used to think, why don't they do that during the game? If it's that easy to do, Why are they holding back during the game? We don't have this kind of home runs in. Well, of course, there's several reasons. Number one, the pitching's a little bit different. But number two, the pressure's on. Not any pressure during batting practice. The pressure is on. And that's when it really counts. I suggest that what we do here at church, in a lot of ways, this is batting practice. This is batting practice. When we can give the answers, we can ask the questions and we know the answers and we share that with each other, the game starts when we go out these doors. What are we doing out there? What's our record out there? When we step up to the plate, when we're supposed to be shining lights to a world of darkness, cities of light and salt, we're going to strike out or we're going to hit a home run. Well, the practice is here. The preparation is here. But the game, it's out there. Tonight, if we can help you in any way, as you prepare for that game that we hope you're engaged in, we want to help you as we stand and as we sing.